Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Good morning. Happy Thursday to you. Coming to you live from Everbank Field, as we are every day. Jaguars Today on the air here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Flying mostly solo today. Mike Dempsey here. Tyler Devitt along as well. He'll be with you in just 30 seconds as we kick things off today. British Open on the television early this morning. We did a question of the day, I think last week before, might have even been early this week. I've lost track of time. But we asked you, what is the sporting event you're most looking forward to between now and the actual start of the NFL regular season? And most people, maybe not most, but the biggest vote-getter was the British Open, ongoing right now. And Jordan Spieth looking to win his third major championship of the year. Pretty good start for him today, going 5-under par with a birdie on the final hole after bogeying 17. Made a nice little, I don't know, it's hard for me to estimate the distance, 25-footer with a foot and a half of break, it looked like. Dustin Johnson leads the way at 7-under par right now, and he's played very well at major championships before, yet to collect one, as he's had some heartbreak down the stretch, self-induced.
Mike, you're a fantasy golf guy. Who was your pick this week?
I am.
Who was your pick?
I went with Ricky Fowler this week.
Good choice.
But here's the thing. In fantasy golf, the way in the league I play, and you can only use every person one time, so I can't pick Spieth every week.
Oh, a strategy.
Jordan Spieth. Well, yeah. I mean, you use them once, and you get what they do that week, and then the rest of the time you sit around wishing you had picked them a different time. That's kind of how my season typically goes. But I went with Fowler because, you know, obviously he's hot. Went in the Scottish Open last week. He has played well in major championships in recent vintage, certainly last year, top five in all the majors. And, you know, he's playing probably his best golf of his career this year. I don't know. I would have rather have gone with Dustin Johnson or Jordan Spieth. I mean, how can you not root for Spieth if you're a golf fan, unless you really have a particular rooting interest in it? I think a lot of people had a particular rooting interest when Tiger was at the height of his fame. I'm sure there are people out there that have their favorites out there, but it's nothing like Tiger Mania was. So as a golf fan, as an American golf fan, I want to see Spieth do well. I'd love to see the PGA Championship have a chance for the calendar year Grand Slam. It'd be phenomenal. It'd be one of the great sports stories of my lifetime if he were able to pull it off. At one point, when I woke up this morning, it was 6-under par at the top of the leaderboard. I tend to forget, Tyler. I don't set my clock to get up and watch the British Open. When I get up, it's there.
What was it, 4 a.m.?
4 a.m. it started.
Ooh,
I'm not
early.
Getting up at 4 a.m. to watch the first round.
Well, you could get up at 4 a.m., watch the British Open, and listen to Jeff and Dan on the Drill at 6.
Well, I record that at 6.
Oh,
I record
gotcha.
That for later playback in its entirety. And I also listen to them on the way in, so I get a double dip of that. Tiger shot, what, 4 over today? Or is he still on the course? I think he's on the course at 4 over right now. I think there's a live look at him missing yet another putt, not particularly close by PGA standards. So Tiger's a good 11 shots off the pace right now. So if you're hoping horse for the course was going to kick in for Tiger, he's certainly got a great track record at St. Andrews. Not the case in round one on a day where everybody is going low. All right, we are going to talk plenty of football today, folks. We'll get into the Houston Texans today. Boo! Boo! Why are we going to do that? Boo, we don't like them. Well, we're going team by team, game by game through the Jaguars schedule and taking a look at the various opponents they'll be facing this year. And they're the next one up. We're on to week 6. We did the Bucks on Tuesday. We're going to do the Houston Texans today with John Harris covering the Texans for us. He'll chime in on, A, who's going to play quarterback for that team. Most people think it'll be Brian Hoyer ultimately, but somewhat of a battle going into training camp with Ryan Mallett. What about B, Jadeveon Clowney? Do they expect to get out of him what they expected to get out of him last year? How healthy do they expect him to be in year two of his NFL career, basically a washout as a rookie last year? And where do they think they stand in the AFC South? So we'll get into a little Houston Texan scouting today with John Harris. And Pete Prisco will join us a little over an hour, about an hour and 15 minutes from now. Pete will stop by. We'll talk about all the latest news from around the National Football League, which included a bevy of franchise tag players getting their contracts done yesterday. Long-term extensions for 4 out of the 5. We knew Jason Pierre-Paul would not get a long-term deal because the Giants had pulled it off the table, the offer that they had out there. They still have the franchise tag on the table for him, which all indications are he will not sign until he's medically cleared to play because he doesn't want to risk the team putting him on the non-football injury list and then having him under their control but not having to pay him. So we'll see how that all plays out. But as before we went off the air yesterday, Justin Houston got his deal done right around noontime, noon Eastern time. And I did predict that the one guy who was going to get it done, it would be him, because it just seemed like the wide receivers were so far off in their negotiations, at least on what was being reported. Then all of a sudden the logjam broke and, you know, we heard calls of collusion if Denver and Dallas didn't strike long-term deals with Demaryius Thomas and Dez Bryant respectively. That Dez Bryant said, according to a conversation he had with Stephen Jones, that the Cowboys and Broncos had discussed why these current receivers shouldn't get a Megatron-type contract, a Calvin Johnson-type contract, because the circumstances were different. Calvin Johnson came in under the old labor deal and was facing a franchise tag charge in the $20 million range, $20-plus million. These guys were only going to get 12.8 this season. I say only as a relative term, but both of them getting five-year, $70 million deals, roughly the same. Demaryius Thomas looks like he's got some more guaranteed money that is guaranteed in there. But look, unless these guys melt down off the field, their teams are not going to be looking to get rid of them anytime soon. So they're going to collect the majority of that money in the first few years of the deal and move on from there. 5 years, $70 million. We'll get into that a little bit later on. What it does for the market now for the rest of these guys out there, including Julio Jones and A.J. Green, the next two who are playing on the final year of their rookie deals this season. And, you know, they both said they're not going to hold out. They're not going to create a stink, but already reports coming out of Atlanta now that the Falcons may move to secure Julio Jones' services. Not kind of that the market has been set. There's a group of seven or eight guys who are considered the best receivers in the game today. And I don't know, in any given week, how you pick one ahead of the others. I think Dez Bryant, you look at his body of work, you look at Demaryius Thomas' body of work. It's more impressive than Julio Jones. But Julio Jones has had some foot issues, and that's what's held him back. Had a big year this past year with over 1,500 yards, but those other guys have kind of done that either yardage-wise for Demaryius Thomas or, in the case of Dez Bryant, a lot more production in the touchdown department. Not as big on the yardage as these other guys, but he's more of that red zone threat and the scoring threat. What's more valuable? Well, apparently the Broncos and Cowboys think they're about equally valuable. And what a amazing how they came to almost the exact same terms for these two guys, and, you know, without discussing that amongst themselves. Of course, there's no collusion that goes on in professional sports, he says. Tyler, I did not watch much of the ESPYs last night. In fact, as I quite often do, I forgot it was on, quite frankly. It's not appointment viewing for me. Award shows in general, I can take them or leave them. I don't hate on the ESPYs. It's okay if you enjoy it and you want to see those guys. But I just, you know, I almost... Now, I used to miss it so much when baseball took the All-Star break, Tyler, because I lived it and breathed it every single day. And as I've become less of a baseball fan, more ingrained with football, the All-Star break's kind of a time now where I can catch up on my sleep a little bit. I can let my wife have the remote control, although she'd probably argue that that's a lie, you know, for a couple of days anyway. But last night, I happened to flip through when Devon Still was up on stage. Of course, his daughter Leah battling cancer in a well-publicized battle, and things are going well, it appears, but she's still not 100% right now. And he got up there and talked about what the support of, you know, the sports community meant to him and meant to her and meant to their family. And it was a pretty nice thing, a nice moment, and, you know, hearkening back to Jim Valvano back in the 90s with the famous ESPY speech, don't give up, don't ever get up.
No tears
for me. No, look, if I
come on,
you know what, I would freely admit, if he brought me to tears, I would tell you, I'm a man. Why should I be ashamed if I shed a tear about a story about a little girl who is fighting cancer and doing so bravely and, you know, successfully? And what a wonderful story. You know what? I wish he had moved me to tears last night, but he didn't. Probably because, in part, he didn't really get choked up. He's probably talked about this a lot. He's dealt with it a lot. I'm sure it's been an emotional issue for him. But I enjoyed listening to him. I enjoyed the fact that, you know, his daughter is doing well, obviously. And I thought that was a good moment last night. I didn't see any of the Caitlyn Jenner appearance last night, so I can't really comment on that. But as I was flipping through the digital pages of the various websites that I peruse, stop it, all you people with dirty minds out there. I'm talking about Deadspin for one of them last night. I came across the clip of Ronda Rousey on the red carpet. I know Jeff Prosser mentioned this earlier, but I don't think he did it justice, and I want to let Ronda Rousey do this justice. You've seen the clip, right, Tyler? You've heard the clip.
Oh, I saw it on Twitter last night, and I busted out laughing. I was like,
it was tremendous.
It was great.
I'm an unabashed Floyd Mayweather hater, okay? I am, because Floyd Mayweather,
rightfully so,
I think, is a serial abuser of women and an unrepentant serial abuser of women. Okay, if you look at his comments, he's a denier. He's had, I want to say, 7 instances with 5 different women where he's been accused of domestic violence. I mean, it's an ugly, ugly, sordid resume for Floyd Mayweather, and I think he's a despicable human being. So, Ronda Rousey, are we just going to hear her response? Because I want to set this up properly.
We're just going to hear the whole thing.
Oh, you have the intro with the guy kind of introducing her, right, on the red carpet?
Jesse Palmer and Carrie Champion.
Oh, was it Jesse Palmer who was throwing her? I didn't even notice that last night as I watched a clip. I thought it was odd. First of all, why are they handing out ESPYs on the red carpet? Do they do this all the time to like people that they know they're not going to have enough time to bring them up on stage? I guess not every category gets this moment in the sun, right? And they have to still get their award. But I thought it was strange as she walks up and he's like, hey, the way I remember it, and you can play it back here in a second, was he said, let me be the first to give you the ESPY, as if she's going to get a bunch of them from, on the same thing. But we'll roll the clip last night. This is the red carpet as Ronda Rousey showed up. She was up for Fighter of the Year in a group that included Floyd Mayweather Jr., and I don't know who else was even nominated in the category. I mean, I don't know how many other people would even leap to mind. But Ronda Rousey ultimately won the ESPY, and here was the interaction, I guess, with Jesse Palmer and Carrie Champion on the red carpet last night.
We know that you are nominated for 3 ESPYs here tonight, but we want to be the first to present you, on behalf of ESPN, the ESPY for Best Fighter. You beat out Floyd Mayweather, and you should have.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
No, ladies and gentlemen, take a moment to suck that in. She is, and soak that in as well. You are the best fighter.
Wow. Well, I can't help but really say that I wonder how Floyd feels being beat by a woman for once. Wow. I'd like to see you pretend to not know who I am now.
Wow.
Ronda Rousey, thank you so much. Enjoy your night tonight.
You know, the second line was just a throw-in. I'd like to see you pretend that you don't know who I am now. But I thought the first one was so beautiful. She looked right into the camera and just delivered it directly. You're not used to getting beat by a woman. Kind of the shoes on the other foot for a change here, buddy.
The comedic pause was awesome.
I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic. She does have some acting chops now. She's been in the Expendables series and probably others that I can't recall right now. But wasn't that weird? Jesse Palmer said, let me be the first to present you with the ESPY for Fighter of the Year. As if she's going to be presented with that same ESPY over and over all night long. It was just a curious choice of words. And then Carrie Champion urging her to suck it all in last night. Or soak it in, as the case may be. So good for Ronda Rousey. And but people have been saying, I think she could take Floyd Mayweather. There's no doubt in my mind she could take Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather weighs about a 92 pounds, he looks like. Are you kidding me? Get rid of your bodyguards and then go walk around and let's see how tough you are, Floyd Mayweather. Look, he'd take me, but a lot of people would take me, Tyler. So that's really not the measuring stick I think we need to go by. Plexico Burress made me smile yesterday. We had some news relevant to this program coming out of SEC Media Days with some comments made by Nick Saban. We'll get into those. And Plex's response, he, of course, played for Saban at Michigan State way back in the day. A little more on the fallout of the franchise guys getting their deals done. Dez, Demaryius, Justin Houston, Steven Gostkowski, the kicker for the Patriots. Oh, we're all on the edge of our seats hoping that would get done, certainly. And we'll keep an eye on the British Open leaderboard right now. Dustin Johnson atop the leaderboard all by himself at 7 under par. Give you a complete rundown on the applicable scores coming up a little bit later on. So we'll talk Texans football with John Harris. We'll get into the league at large with Pete Prisco. We'll take your calls today at 641-1010. You can also use that as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Keep in mind, you may not know this, but I'm going to tell you now. Today's Barry Sanders' birthday. He turns 47 years young today. Certainly, when you talk all time, if you don't have a rooting interest, just guys you like to watch, guys who everyone enjoyed watching, the Gale Sayers types, to me, Michael Vick at the height of his prowess, Barry Sanders, guys that could just, I think the guys that make you miss right, in the open field are the fun guys to watch a lot of the time, and I think a lot of people can relate to how fun Barry Sanders was to watch. So today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day is asking you to reply to this. Among non-Jaguars currently in the NFL, I'm not talking all time now, who's your favorite current player, who's the most exciting player to watch who doesn't play for the Jags? Obviously, you would list 90 players on the Jags 90-man roster first. They're all the most exciting to watch, we know. But beyond this one franchise, outside of the team that you likely root for if you listen to this show, who is, do you deem, the most exciting player to put your eyeballs on in the current National Football League? We'll get to your responses to that later. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL. You've got at 1010XL Tyler. You've got the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. And we're off and running. There we go. Live at Everbank. We'll come back. We'll get into Plexico Burress going after Nick Saban and some more. What's going to be the fallout from some of these 5-year, $70 million deals that these wide receivers got yesterday? All that coming up and more. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
We're trying to get ready for a game, and all of a sudden a guy finds out he's a first-round draft pick, or a guy that thought he was a first-round draft pick finds out he's not a first-round draft pick, and we're trying to get ready to play a playoff game. It would be better not to submit that information to a player until he was finished competing in college.
That's Nick Saban, Alabama head coach, yesterday at SEC Media Days. Who's he talking about there, Tyler? Here are the three guys that went in the first and second round from Alabama this year. Amari Cooper, you had Landon Collins, you had T.J. Yeldon. Is he saying T.J. Yeldon was running out of bounds and he wasn't playing tough?
I hope not.
Well, I mean,
he kind of is, though.
I mean, who's he talking about? He's talking about Amari Cooper? Did Amari Cooper start playing hard? I mean, T.J. Yeldon looks to me like his draft stock was maximized, right? I mean, a lot of people wouldn't have been surprised if he lasted until the third round. Very few people thought he'd be a first-round pick. So to go as high as he did in the second round, T.J. Yeldon did quite well for himself. I don't think anything he did down the stretch had an impact on, you know, the Jags scouting of him negatively, certainly, and that's not Nick Saban's concern. I understand his point. Hey, you're here to play for us. Plexico Burress fired back. We'll get to that coming up momentarily. I thought it was an interesting, not necessarily an exchange, but a retort to what Nick Saban had to say yesterday, as far as that goes. And I heard the guys talking about this morning, a group of Ohio State Buckeye supporters showed up at SEC Media Days at the Winfrey Hotel, which is usually a bastion of Alabama fandom anyway. They're right there in the backyard, practically the Crimson Tide, and they outnumber everybody, particularly on the day that the Alabama contingent comes in. So I find it funny that they're kind of trolling them, a little in-person trolling happening in Hoover, Alabama yesterday. To the victors go the spoils. That's how it goes. Hey, SEC, greatest conference in the world, in the history of creation, I believe, is how you're supposed to say it. And Ohio State all not that impressed with that group based on recent results. So we'll take a look at what Plex had to say momentarily. I'll give you a quick look at the Open leaderboard, the Open Championship. It's the Open. It's not the British
Scobie
Open.
Scobie update.
It's a Scobie update. Scobie's playing, by the way, in the deal out in Lake Tahoe this week. I think that starts today, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken. I saw Ryan O'Hallen do a write-up on Scobie. Like, he thinks he has a chance, you know, that now that he's a little bit more familiar with the course out there in Lake Tahoe in the celebrity deal that they do out there every year. Only 11 NFL players playing in it. Blake Bortles is another one. So you got two Jags representing, you know, what does that make? Be like 18% of the field. I'm trying to guess. I'm trying to do math in my head. That's probably a dangerous thing. Tiger Woods shot 4 over 76 today. Why are you mentioning him first? He's not a factor. Well, you know, he's kind of a factor in people's minds anyway when it comes to golf. He tied Tom Watson, so he tied Tom. Tom's playing his last British Open. Tiger's probably playing his last British Open round of the year tomorrow, it looks like, at this point in time. Tied for 133rd. He was just tied with Watson and a guy named Jocko Van Zeel from South Africa. Jocko, though, just let a couple more shots get away. He is now in last place at +6. But you got three guys at +5 or +6 are the only guys worse than Tiger Woods out there on the course today. Pretty good leaderboard. And it's loaded with guys under par. Right now, 75 players are under par, one under or better. 7 under tops it. Dustin Johnson looking for his first major. Robert Streb's just been hot. This is the case. This is how I do it in fantasy golf this year, Tyler. Streb got into a playoff a couple weeks ago, and I had Kisner in the playoff, and I believe they both lost the playoff. So last week I went with Streb, who was hot, and I think he finished right around top 10, and now he's at 6 under. He'll probably win the British Open and take home all that big fantasy money for
one
me.
Week late.
Always 1 week. 1 week early, 1 week late. That's generally been how I've been rolling. Wow, Zach Johnson, front 931. He just completed a clean scorecard with 5 birdies. So it's out there, man. Go get it at the old course. Retief Goosen, 2-time major champion, 6 under par. Paul Lawrie, who won the British in 99, was handed the British when John Vandeveld collapsed down the stretch and fell into a playoff, and Lawrie won the playoff in that one. Jason Day, I could have sworn that Jason Day had picked up that first major. For some reason, I thought he'd broken through. I guess it was the match play that he won last year, and he's got a couple of runner-up finishes in major championships. Was still looking for the first one out there as well. And then in a big group at 5 under, Jordan Spieth, the winner of the first two majors of the year this year, along with several other major champions like Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel, in that group as well. And now Zach Johnson at 9 under, halfway through his round, is in great shape. If he can get 3 on the way in, to take the lead overall, as most of the guys who are at 5 under or better are already in the clubhouse. So that's what's going on.
Did you see where Jacksonville Beach resident Russell Knox is at on the leaderboard?
Where is Russell Knox on the leaderboard? I've not seen.
He's
Russell
above Tiger, so that's good. He's
who the hell isn't?
He shot a 72. He's at even, so tied for 75th, middle of the pack, basically. Right. So,
yeah, 72 today, you're probably kicking yourself a little bit, right? I mean, you're just like,
But you know how 72. He got in. You know how he qualified for this, right?
How did he qualify for this?
When Rory McIlroy decided he was not playing, he was the first qualifier.
Did he get his spot? He got the spot because of the soccer injury.
The soccer injury to McIlroy gave the Jacksonville Beach resident a open championship spot.
Hey, well, good for him, man. I hope he does well. You know, I mean, that's fine. Again, boy, you're 7 strokes off the lead shooting even par today at the British Open. That's a course that, when the wind isn't howling, will give you plenty of birdie and eagle opportunities out there at St. Andrews. The wind is supposed to howl the next couple of afternoons, Friday and Saturday. So I'm trying to get Ricky out late today, early tomorrow, get in under that wind and let that wind blow Dustin Johnson all over the course tomorrow. That's my plan. Don't know if that's going to hold up. 641-1010, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Somebody weighs in on our question of the day, which is, who's the most exciting non-Jaguar currently playing in the NFL? He went with J.J. Watt and followed it up with Go Jags, I think, to assure us that his rooting interest lies here in Jacksonville. Someone says they're trying to abstain from saying Russell Wilson, but the urge is too great. Why wouldn't you say Russell Wilson? I think Russell Wilson is right there on that short list of the most exciting guys. Before we get to the phones, let me get to these Plexico Burris comments about Nick Saban. Nick Saban, you heard the comment that he made a moment ago, that he felt like the attention of his players were somewhat divided, at least some of the draft-eligible guys, that they weren't focused on the prize, which was the national championship, potentially. They lose in the semifinals to Ohio State last season, or I guess in January, still last season, and Plexico Burris took offense to that based on some conversations he had with Nick Saban while he played at Michigan State. Tweeting out this series, he says, quoting Plex, "I recall Nick Saban telling me to stay in school and finish what I started, that I wasn't a first-round pick, and then he left for LSU before the season was over. Now Nick Saban goes on TV saying that kids are distracted by NFL projections. Well, the kids are just chasing a dream that you were, which is money," says Plex to Nick Saban. And Saban looked his players in the face at the Duff. I don't know what the Duff is. I'm assuming that's some kind of gathering place for the Michigan State football program, but looked his players in the face at the Duff, said he wasn't leaving, "I'm committed to the program," quote, and then he was gone the next day. True story. Again, continuing Plexico Burris' little Twitter montage here. "Now Nick Saban's players are being distracted by the NFL and chasing a dream. Ha ha. Tell your story, Nick. LSU showed you the money. You was gone. Ha. Nick Saban actually told me I was a second-round pick. I said, where are you getting your info from? Are you watching these games? Ha ha ha." Keep in mind, Plexico Burris, I believe, went 8th overall in the draft to the Pittsburgh Steelers when he came out. I was a 19-year-old kid. The man that recruited me to play for him looked me in my face and told me a lie. So he's basically saying, Nick Saban said, you got to be committed to this program. You need to come back. You are not ready for the NFL. You're only going to be a second-round pick. And then basically the next day, Nick Saban packed his bags and ran for the money at LSU. I mean, look, Nick Saban's had a history of telling you one thing and doing something else. He unequivocally said when he was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, I am absolutely not taking the job. I will not be the head coach at Alabama. Didn't deflect. That was a direct answer. And then, of course, that was a lie. And, I mean, I understand the situation you get in when you're getting courted. What are you supposed to say? Well, we'll find out if I'm going to be the head coach at Alabama. I'm listening to their offer. We'll see if they sweeten the pot. I mean, it is a difficult situation to be in, but you should probably, in most cases, try to say nothing, and that's going to be interpreted in a negative way anyway. But when you come out and say something definitive, like, if you're really not interested, you should say so. Well, that's the problem. If you say so and they give you a great offer and you go, then you're a liar. If you say you're not interested, then, well, you're losing some of your leverage to improve your situation. I'm not saying coaches shouldn't leave for another job if, you know, under the tenets of their contract, whatever they're allowed to do. But it is kind of a hypocritical situation to be in, to tell these players, you can't leave our program. Look what we're doing for you here. You've committed to us. Finish out your commitment. And then the worst part here, though, to me, is downplaying Plexico Burress's NFL chances. I find it hard to believe if Nick Saban was as on top of things as we're all led to believe that he didn't understand what Plexico Burress's NFL potential was. Going in the top 10 probably was not a surprise when he came out. And to tell him that he was a second-round pick, and I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to get him to come back. That's what he's trying to do. He's not trying to – don't tell me he's trying to motivate him to work harder. He's trying to get him to come back to serve Nick Saban in Michigan State. That is up until someone comes and hires me away from Michigan State. So Plex is having none of it coming out of Nick Saban's mouth, and I find it quite amusing, actually. You know, these coaches always want what's best for the program, and that's fine. That's their job. But don't get upset with these players when they want what's best for them, too. All right? Nick Saban, what was it best for Michigan State that you leave LSU? So don't tell me about a commitment to the program. That's what Plexico Burress is saying. And I don't know how you really counter that, to be quite honest. Again, I'm not saying he shouldn't be able to leave. He should be able to leave. But don't try to do something towards a kid that's not in his best interest. Look at how Calipari handles it at Kentucky. He's turning into the greatest recruiting poster of all time. Yeah, come here. Come for a year. Leave early. Go. Go. I'm going to make you a first-round pick, and then I'm going to sit up there on the dais and again, walk up there and shake your hand and hug it out with you every time one of these Kentucky Wildcats gets picked. That's my job, to get these guys. Now, Kentucky fans are going to say, your job is to win games. And look, he's doing it both, okay? He's trying to have the best of all worlds, and right now that's working very well. One thing I've learned talking to players over the years, Jaguar players primarily here in this locker room, as the team I cover, is that they can handle bad news. Just shoot me straight. Don't lie to me as a coach. I got to believe in the words coming out of your mouth. I got to believe that you have, that you're shooting straight. Even if it's not in my best interest, if you're looking at a big picture that may be better for the team than it is for me, as long as you're telling me straight what you're all about and what you expect, and there's consistency in the message, they can deal with a lot of things. You know, don't tell me when I clearly know I'm worth this that I'm not, because you're tricking me, or you're trying to trick me into winning one for the old alma mater, and then you're ready to pick up and head out of town at the drop of a hat if the right offer comes along. So Plex firing back at Nick Saban. I doubt Nick Saban will have much of a rebuttal to that. Why should he? He's probably pretty happy. He's a king in the state of Alabama. They're very happy with him. He's got no qualms about job security or anything like that. He can pretty much act any way he wants, and it seems to have not hurt him a bit, because he continues to develop NFL talent. But I wonder if he's whispering to guys who are coming out early, hey, you know what? You're not ready. You're not ready. And it certainly hasn't seemed to catch up with him at this point in time, anything he may have said to Plexico Burress, because he keeps leapfrogging to better situations for himself. But Plex firing back with both cylinders yesterday. 641-1010. Let me get Gary in here before we break. Question of the day is, who's the most exciting current player in the National Football League who doesn't play for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hey, Mike. How are you? Yeah, I'd like to say that. But first of all, doesn't Nick Saban remind you of Clint Eastwood and Gran Torino? You kids get off of my lawn. You know, grumpy old.
Yeah, a little bit. And I mean, right. Anybody who's kind of got that little bit of an edge, like I like things. You know, the things were always better in the past. I could see that a little bit. Yeah, very good movie, by the way.
Right. You know, I'm very upset because you know, running fast paced offenses. You know, there's more injuries because of that with no data to support it, and you know. Ridiculous stuff like that, but I
Nick Saban is like a lot of us, Gary, very self-serving, and I'll admit I'm on that list too. I'm sure.
Well,
so.
He's definitely the king of that. I got to go with Aaron Rodgers because even though Tom Brady's a great quarterback, Mike, I like quarterbacks like Marino, Elway, Rodgers, guys that throw the ball down the field a little bit. The Patriots win a lot, but they're so boring. I like a quarterback that'll take chances once in a while, throw the ball down the field, and I just love the way Aaron Rodgers plays.
All right, thank you, man. I love the way Aaron Rodgers plays as well. He is pretty exciting to watch. You know, quarterbacks aren't always in that category. Typically, I tend towards the running quarterbacks, the guys that have that dual threat dimension. So the first answer I got today from Irish Jag was Cam Newton. Love watching guys like that, that can do it all. Can break your ankles and drop back and plant that back foot and fire it 40 yards downfield as well. So weigh in on that on Twitter, on Facebook, however you like. By the way, John Daly's at 4-under. At the British. He won it at St. Andrews when he won the British. Remember, it was, Constantino Rocca made that crazy putt from down in front on 18 to force the four-hole playoff, and you thought, oh, gosh, that's going to be it. He just stole the win from Daly. Daly's going to collapse now, and he didn't. He won the four-hole playoff, and he's got five birdies and a bogey so far through 10 holes at 4-under par. He's a factor tied for 14th in round one. So there you go. John Daly, 8 shots clear of Tiger Woods right now at the British Open. Coming up next, Texans sideline man John Harris joins us. We'll get into the Texans. What do they bring to the table this year? Who's going to play quarterback for that team? And what do they expect out of Jadeveon Clowney coming up in year two of that young man's life? We'll get to that, his NFL life. We'll get to that. Pete Prisco joins us a little less than an hour from now, about 11:20 Eastern time. We'll go around the league with Pete as well. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
There's that what you called for, Jeff. They roll him out of the pocket. Bortles runs to the right, fires it into the end zone. Diving attempt. Touchdown, Jacksonville! A diving catch on the rollout. Lagerman called for it. Bortles delivered it. Allen Hurns with the touchdown.
That's a good way to get off to a start against the Texans last year. Jags couldn't make it happen over the long haul for 60 minutes. Will it change this time around? I think I just jinxed John Daly. Those are some awful pants he's wearing. I understand he wears that flamboyant company's pants, and that's fine today. Oh, they're awful. And that face looks just so weather-beaten right there. I'm not sure if he just bogeyed. He just missed a short putt. Either he had a chance to get the 5-under or he dropped to 3 because he missed a short one. But it might have been me. And I'll take the hit on that one if that's the case. John Harris, a football analyst for the Houston Texan Radio and TV Network, of course, works as a sideline reporter for them as well. And you can read him at HoustonTexans.com on occasion. And on occasion, he'll join us here to talk Texans football. And, of course, going back to his Jacksonville roots as a football coach over at Episcopal. John, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. In fact, I was standing about 5 feet away from Allen Hurns making that catch. And what an extraordinary catch and what a great year an undrafted free agent that had, Allen Hurns. But, when I saw that catch, I started thinking, man, when Allen Robinson comes back, that wide receiver core for Jacksonville is going to be stout. And I got a feeling it's going to be here in a couple of years. When he returns. But, yeah, I was about 5 feet away from that, Mike.
Yeah, well, we're glad you had an up-close view of that. We wish we could have given you a few more of those kind of highlights or lowlights from your perspective working with the Texans, John. But they like their young core. Of course, they had a wily veteran by their standards in the meeting room last year who's now on your roster out there in Houston. How's Cecil Shorts doing? And I'll start there. What do you expect his role to be on the team this year? Do you expect him to win the number two job opposite DeAndre Hopkins, or is he in a pretty good battle for that spot?
You know, obviously DeAndre Hopkins is number one, and I think clear number one, and I don't think it's close. I think I don't want to be that local guy that says, oh, he's underrated, but I really think he is. I think what DeAndre does, I think teams will continue to see, and of course without Andre Johnson now, he'll get the focus of coverage. But we've debated who number two is going to be, and I don't even know if we got to the point we look at it that way, Mike. I think we look at Cecil. The question I think for Cecil is going to be, does he play inside or does he play outside? And I think for Cecil, the best thing for him is he could play both. And I think they're going to use him at both when they use their three wide receiver package. I think he could bump inside. Maybe Jalen Strong is the rookie at Arizona State takes over as the outside guy. Maybe Cecil is the move guy on the inside. And I know he did some of that in Jacksonville, and then sometimes he didn't, depending on injuries and what he was asked to do. But I think Cecil inside, and they used him there at minicamps and OTAs, and I liked him on the inside as a slot receiver, a guy in motion that could get matched up on nickel corners or on strong safeties. I think he could win a lot of those battles. Again, and you guys know this, he's got to stay healthy. He got dinged up a little bit in OTAs, missed a couple of days. He's got to stay healthy. This team needs veteran presence at wide receiver. It's a totally revamped wide receiver core. Outside of DeAndre, there's not much left from what was there the last couple of years. So Cecil's got to be on the field to provide that veteran presence, especially if they're going to end up starting Jalen Strong alongside DeAndre Hopkins. Cecil's got to be on the field to at least impart some of that wisdom onto those two guys.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that's been the bugaboo with him staying healthy. He's a good performer when he's on the field, and just a good quality guy. We loved having Cecil here in Jacksonville, and you will as well in Houston. And you go back to what you said about DeAndre Hopkins. I think, John, the thing that stands out to me is how productive he was last year with a rotating, you know, series of quarterbacks and shaky quarterback play. Nobody really putting themselves forth as that future franchise guy. Right now, from afar, Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, my guess would be Hoyer, based on the experience, has the edge and would win that starting job. But how do you see the competition?
There are a lot of people in Houston, I say here because I'm actually in Hoover for SEC Media Day, so I shouldn't say here, but in Houston, that actually have started leaning more towards Hoyer. I think the consensus from the fans and from a lot of people, they want Mallett. They want to see the big arm. They want to see what we didn't see last year. I mean, he had a nice 8-game audition about ready to happen. And then in that Cincinnati game, he went down and we only got to see him for 2 games. I think that he played the rest of that season. I think Ryan Mallett would be the starter. I think he would have signed a much bigger contract. I think they would have found a different veteran to put in that room with Ryan Mallett and Tom Savage, the number three guy. But when that didn't happen and Bill had the opportunity to go out and get a guy he's very comfortable with and Brian Hoyer, I think that opportunity said, okay, let's start a competition. Let's let the competition commence. I think, and Mike, you know this, coaches love consistency. They would love it to be a consistent, high ceiling guy, but that's the thing with Ryan Mallett. He doesn't always get to his ceiling. He's got a higher ceiling, Brian Hoyer, but he's got a much lower floor. And the problem is he vacillates between those. Brian Hoyer, you know, is going to be consistent all the way throughout. Plus, he knows this offense, and I think the fact that he knew the offense and Mount knows the offense and the entire offense now has been in it for a couple of years, I think you'll see more consistency and more efficiency with the offense. My gut tells me it's going to be Hoyer, but I don't think that Ryan Mount is completely out of this thing. I would love to see Mount as a starter. I just think there's so much more they can do with his arm strength and his ability to throw the ball down the field. But I don't think it's going to be that way. I think it's going to be Hoyer and then to be his job to lose. And maybe he does, and Mount takes over at that point, like 2014. Hopefully he can stay healthy at that point. But they'll battle it out. It'll definitely be on Hard Knocks for everyone to see.
No doubt about that. Are they excited about that? Are the players excited about that from what you can gather? I know they're not around much during the summer, John. But some organizations embrace it. Some organizations shy away from the spotlight that it brings. Primarily, I think coaches hate having to cut players on video and have that shown out there and for a variety of reasons. But have the players in the organization embraced it, and do they look forward to the cameras being there?
I think there are a couple of them, a few of them that are like, hey, we don't care. Yeah, that's great. You get a chance to see us. And there are a couple of guys I think will end up being stars out of all this. Ben Jones, former Georgia center, I think he's going to end up being a star. He's just going to be himself. And we asked him about it. He started chuckling and said, well, you know, I'm country. I'll be fine. So, I think it sort of comes down from the top. I think Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien have kind of, I don't want to say embraced the idea. I think they've been forced to embrace it. And I think they have sort of projected onto the players, hey, look, let the cameras see how hard we work and what kind of teammates you guys are to one another. So I think that's what the players have been preaching, and I think some of them feel that way. Jonathan Joseph, who was with the Bengals when Hard Knocks went through Cincinnati, he just said, look, I stay out of it. that's for other people to be around. So there's some that just want to avoid it altogether. And then there's some that embrace the idea and will embrace the idea no matter what happens to them during the show. I think there are some looking forward to it, not many, but most of them are just, look, we want to get our work done and get ready for the season.
Texans will be in here for the first of two games, the one that they'll play in Jacksonville on October 18th, week six of the NFL season. Talking Texans football with John Harris, their sideline man, at J. Harris Football on Twitter. John, certainly a disappointing rookie campaign, or really not even a campaign, just a disappointing situation last year with Jadeveon Clowney. What are you hearing about their, you know, his expected return to the field and when he'll be at full health and what the Texans are saying about this guy right now?
Well, Mike, I'll tell you the one thing, and as crazy as it sounds, because you don't ever think that an injury in any way, shape, or form is a good thing for a player, but I think the rehab from the injury has done a lot for Jadeveon Clowney, believe it or not, because it has forced him, hey, JD, you want to play football? You want to be an NFL player? You have to go through the most arduous rehab you're ever going to have gone through in your life. Are you going to do it? And here's the thing, he has. He has done it. In fact, we were about to fly out on Monday, and we were leaving at about 8:30, I think, 8 or 8:30 from the parking lot, and he was coming back from the field. He had just put in a 90-minute workout because we talked to the trainers right before we were leaving for SEC Media Days. This guy wants to be on the field for day one of training camp. He wants to be there. Now, I don't think they will allow him to if they don't get the full clearance, but he wants to get on the field for game one against Kansas City. He wants to prove to everybody that he wasn't a bust. He heard all of that. He heard all the things that people in Houston were saying. He tried to, you know, block it out, but he heard it. And I think it's driven him a little bit to show everybody, hey, I can do this. And if he does return with the presence of Vince Wilfork, and of course, 99 is pretty good, and you throw in Clowney, and you draft Bernard McKinney, and Cushing's there, you got the opportunity of having a pretty good front seven, but I think a lot of it obviously has to do with what Jadeveon Clowney brings back. But the rehab, to me, was most important because it showed that he wants to get back on this field and prove a lot of people wrong. A lot of people in Houston, Mike, said he's a bust. He's done. They should have never drafted him. I think he's willing and wants to prove all those people wrong in 2015 and beyond.
John, you mentioned 99, and that's where we'll stop the conversation with J.J. Watt, voted by his peers in the NFL.com rankings as the top player in the National Football League this year. Where can he get better, John? I mean, he had a season for the ages, but he's had a few of those seasons for the ages in his early part of his career. Can he actually continue to improve from where he is right now?
Yeah, Mike, he doesn't throw the tightest spiral in the world, so, you know, yeah. he's gonna have to work on that a little bit. You know, it's funny. I think the JJ, the one thing that I don't think a lot of people see, because he makes a lot of his tackles for a loss doing this, but, you know, JJ a lot of times won't go with the flow. He's going to swim upstream. So a lot of times he gets run plays that are away from him.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. A bevy of birthdays on this date, July 16th, going back to 1943. Jimmy Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, NFL coach with the Dallas Cowboys and the Miami Dolphins, two-time Super Bowl champ, if I'm not mistaken, right? Barry Switzer came in and vultured that last one out from under Jimmy. Jimmy turned 72 years old today. Born on this date in 1959, Gary Anderson, NFL kicker for six different teams, primarily with Pittsburgh, the very early part of his career. I say early, probably played for him for about a dozen years, had a 23-year kicking career in the National Football League. Jumping ahead to 1972, a Jaguar for a moment in time, Aaron Glenn was a member of the 2007 Jacksonville Jaguar team. Good long-term cornerback in the National Football League, primarily with the Jets. Knowshon Moreno turns 30 today, born in this date in 1985. What a shame for Knowshon, man. Finally, seemed to have gotten it all together in Denver a couple of years ago. Goes to Miami. It doesn't work out. Now he's torn an ACL again. He's rehabbing his torn ACL and is an unrestricted free agent and could be done with his NFL career. And born in this date in 1971, Zach Mettenberger. Oh, yeah. The backup to Marcus Mariota, the high school guy, 1991, that makes him 24 years old today. But born on this date in 1968, arguably the all-time greatest running back to ever lace them up. Barry Sanders, in his career, ran for 15,269 yards, 99 rushing touchdowns, despite the fact that they frequently pull him at the goal line. Barry Sanders' worst year in the NFL, in which he played more than 11 games, he accounted for 1,352 yards. His worst year, he had 1,100 yards in 11 games. That's just because he was hurt. Never failed to top that mark and finished his career with 1,491 yards at the age of 30 and just said, enough is enough. I am walking away from the game. 10-time Pro Bowler, 6-time first-team All-Pro, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2004. And a hell of a nice guy. I've met him several times now and never fails to disappoint, or never disappoints, never fails to impress, I should say. Barry Sanders, one of the best of all time. Born on this date in football history, brought to you by First Coast Roofing, the only call you need to make for all your roofing needs, residential or commercial, re-roofs or repairs. Call today to get a free estimate at 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now drive around the NFL.
Yesterday we were talking earlier, Mike, about the deadline for franchise tag players to reach multi-year deals with their ball clubs. The Dallas Cowboys hammered out a long-term deal with Dez Bryant, a 5-year, $70 million deal, according to NFL media insider Ian Rappaport. He also adds that Dez gets $20 million in a signing bonus, so good day yesterday for Dez. $23 million of that dollars is guaranteed upon signing of his deal, and the rest of his $45 million in guarantees comes next March. The Chiefs and Justin Houston nailed down a huge long-term deal as well. Houston inked a 6-year, $101 million deal. Almost half that is guaranteed, $52.5 million in guaranteed money. Ian Rappaport adds that Houston's signing bonus is $20.5 million, and his contract includes $32.5 million guaranteed, was the final number reported. The contract is the richest deal in Chiefs history and the largest for any linebacker. And finally, the NFL draft. The dates were announced for next year, April 28th through 30th. Mark that in your calendar. The location to be announced, but I'm sure with the great success it saw last year in Chicago, I'm sure it'll go right back there, right, Mike?
Well, I don't know if it'll go right back there, actually. I think there's some speculation that Los Angeles or even Canton, Ohio, as a way to prop up the Pro Football Hall of Fame, are locales that they've considered for next year. So I definitely think it will make a return engagement in Chicago. I just don't know if it'll be next year or not. I think, you know, the success that they had, they basically turned it into a 3-day kind of a festival there, and it was very impressive to be there to see how they handled it. A lot of people turned out, I likened it, you know, a little bit to like a Pro Bowl atmosphere. You did have certainly more Chicago Bears uniforms being worn by fans, understandably so, but you saw representatives from pretty much every NFL team when I was there. The Bold City Brigade and the Teal Street Hooligans represented Jacksonville very well.
Good stuff.
Very good stuff. So, it'll go back to Chicago. Will it go back next year? I tend to think they're going to try to move it around and create these bidding-type situations, much like they do with the Super Bowl.
But don't you think that the NFL, the league office, is going to want to have it in a city that has large enough real estate downtown where they could do the draft town? Because that seemed like it was a huge success last year.
Well, I mean, I would assume L.A., you could find an appropriate venue in Los Angeles. There's got to be an appropriate venue in Los Angeles where you could accommodate people to have that kind of a setup. They just had, basically, they had a big downtown park that they took over. I think it's Grant Park is the name of it. I don't know what, I've never been to Canton, Ohio, so I can't weigh in on that, but they do have the Hall of Fame ceremonies every year. You could probably do it right at the Hall of Fame, right? And there's got to be some facility there that could accommodate. Keep it in mind, I mean, they did it indoors in one building, right, for years and years and years. And if you go back and you watch some of the stuff from, I was watching a 30 for 30 on, forget what it was on, the official topic, but they're showing some highlights from some of the drafts back in like the 1980s. And, Pete Rozelle up at the podium, just kind of casually walking up there. Hey, here's the next guy that went. And, you know, it was a completely different atmosphere. Tiny little room, with a lot fewer reporters and not that big a deal. And obviously it's grown. And yeah, they would like to duplicate what they had last year, but I think they'll find there are plenty of, cities across America that would be suitable. I think you could do it in Jacksonville. That's the thing about the draft. I mean, you don't need nearly as much to accommodate the people who are going to the draft as you need for the people that are going to the Super Bowl. Now, you want to be able to draw from a good base, but I don't think they have any problem packing out the event itself for the actual draft. But, you know, throughout the course of the week, you want to have you feel enough people to come in, take in the NFL experience and all the different things that they set up. But, look, they're pretty good at making money. I'm sure they'll figure it out, and I'm sure when they do figure it out, it will likely work out quite well for the National Football League's bottom line. That's what they seem to do. Oh, Ricky Fowler's killing me with these pars right now at the British Open, Tyler. Don't like it. Five pars in a row out of the gates, including the par five fifth, where I think he just three-putted a moment ago to make a par after reaching the green in two. So you better go low today because a bunch of people are, and that includes Dustin Johnson at the top of the leaderboard. Zach Johnson, the best on the course right now at six under par through 11 holes, just a shot off the pace. Jeff Ogilvy and Cameron Tringali also at five under. And still out on the course as well, and plenty of guys in red numbers playing this afternoon. But 7-under is the lead for Dustin Johnson. Jordan Spieth, 2 off the lead after an opening round, 67 at St. Andrews. Well, you mentioned the guys that got their long-term deals done that were under the franchise tag. What does that mean now for receivers like Julio Jones and A.J. Green? It's one of the things we'll discuss with Pete Prisco from CBS Sports. Pete joins us next. We'll talk Jags and go around the NFL as well, right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And it all goes back to the quarterback, and I saw improvement from him. He's never going to be a guy, you look at him on the practice field, you go, wow, wow, wow. But he's one of those guys, when he gets in the games, if he has right weapons, right offensive system, I think he's going to be a good quarterback. So they're going to be better. Now, how much better? I'm playing out the season now as I go through the summer. I, you know, do that thing every year where I pick every game. I got them winning their first two.
Pete Prisco, CBS Sports, appearing on XL Primetime a couple of weeks ago, got his Stratomatic NFL game out, started to do whatever you do in Stratomatic. What do they have, discs or dice? I never played Stratomatic. It's kind of, I kind of miss that. I played Stratomatic baseball, but Pete was predicting the Jags to get off to a 2-0 start to the season. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? And he joins us right now. Pete, how you doing, man? How's your summer going?
What summer?
Come on. What are you talking
Come
about?
Come on. What
summer?
You know what? I'm to the point now where I'm ready to get back to grinding. I mean, even when I'm one of those guys that if I'm not truly out of town on vacation, then I'm working anyway. So I'm ready to get grinding, and I leave next Sunday. I hit the Vikings right out of the gate for 3 or 4 days, and I'm going to Green Bay for their opening practices, and then to Arizona for my first week, 10 days as a camp tour.
Are there much differences? You've probably been to just about every training camp around the National Football League, Pete. What are the differences that stand out to you? Are there teams that do it better, or you just like the way they have things set up, whether it's the schedule, the amenities, whatever? What are your favorite camps to visit?
Well, this is my first time going to the. I've been to the Vikings facility for mini camps and stuff, but I've never been to their camp in Mankato, so that'll be different. You know, most teams don't go off site anymore, so for me, that's a little bit of difference. But I like when the facility is right there, when the training camp is right there, and you don't have to go drive, 2.5 hours to go see a team. So that helps. The Cardinals to me have a great. The way they do camp now is fantastic under Bruce Arians. And the reason I said that, they used to go up into the mountains because it was so hot. But now what they do is they train inside the stadium there. So it's cool
right
all the way around. And their hotel is right next door. So the guys stay in there. You walk back and forth. It's real easy. So that's one of the better ones. The other thing, too, Mike, is how helpful are the teams? I mean, why go to New England and deal with that when it's a madhouse and you're barely going to get anything? When you can go to teams like Jacksonville, where, I mean, you look at what the Jaguars do, and if they get better, people will be praising the way they handle the media and the organization. If you want to go in there and sit down and spend time with guys and not have a paranoid organization, they're first and foremost among that. So if they get better, I think the media will be raving about the way they handle the media.
Pete Prisco here with us, CBSSports.com. Pete, you mentioned New England, and there's been some talk that we may see a ruling come down from Roger Goodell on the Tom Brady Deflategate situation. What is your best guess on where this will go with the next step, with Roger Goodell's response? What do you think he does?
Well, I think they're going to reduce it to 2, and then I don't think Brady will take it. And I think you might have some, litigation, him against the league. I don't know if they'll go to a full wipeout, the slate, and just fine him type of thing. The reality is, I think it's the most overblown story in the history of the National Football League. And, you know, no pun intended, used in overblown. But I just think when you look at it, look, guys mess with the balls all the time. Now, he got caught. He didn't really get caught. The team got caught. They have, you know, evidence that they like to link to him, but there's no definitive evidence there. There's nothing that they have that we've seen that shows that Brady did it. Now, did he know about it? Probably. So, yeah, I get that he did some things, but everybody does this. And I think when you try and tarnish his legacy, and believe me, I was on the other side of the Manning-Brady debate for years and years and years, but when you try and tarnish a guy's legacy for this, that's just foolishness. It really is.
Well, is there any thought in your mind that Roger Goodell reading the tea leaves, a lot of people think that this is not going to hold up if Brady does challenge this, and if he's going to challenge it regardless of any length of suspension, is there a chance that Goodell just sticks to his guns and says, well, I'll take my chance with the court, because if they're going to reduce it anyway, let me go in high at four games and not try to dial it back if he's just going to take me to court anyway?
Well, I think he's got a wink-wink deal with Kraft for to get it to two, and then it's on Brady from there. That's my gut feeling. I mean, you know, if you add up the 2 and 2 equals 4, and as easily as Kraft took that, and I know there's the old league think policy of, you know, we're all better together than we are as one, then why buck the trend? And then I get that, but I still think there's a little bit of a wink-wink deal there where he said, okay, you take your penalty and your punishment, and we'll reduce it to two.
All right, we saw yesterday, Pete, four of the five guys who are under the franchise tag who had yet to sign it got a long-term deal done with their respective clubs. We knew Jason Pierre-Paul would not. The Giants had withdrawn the offer. But for Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas, five-year, $70 million deals. There's some differences in the way the guaranteed money is structured and all that, but pretty much setting the market for that next wave of wideouts. And that includes Julio Jones and A.J. Green will be the next up to get a big deal. Do they slot right in with those guys, Pete? Do they try to top those guys? Or can you argue that Julio Jones has had some injury issues? He hasn't been as consistently as productive as those two guys who signed the deals yesterday. Where will Julio and AJ fall on the spectrum in relation to the contracts we saw yesterday?
I think they're big years for both of them. And you know, I made AJ Green the most overrated player on his team when I did the overrated, underrated team. And I think AJ Green's a really good football player, but look, in big games over the last couple of years, he's kind of shriveled up at times. I mean, he fumbled at Pittsburgh. You know, they win the division if he doesn't fumble, I think. And he fumbles in that game last year. Against San Diego in the playoff game, he dropped a touchdown pass. Everybody likes to kill Andy Dalton, but here you have A.J. Green dropping a touchdown pass on the sideline that he should have caught and, you know, maybe changed that game. So I think he's a bit overrated. I don't think he's, you know, as good as those guys. He's in right behind them. I think, you know, Dez Bryant's the best receiver in the league, and I don't think there's any, in my mind, I don't think there's any question about that. I think after this year, and that's why I made him number two, I think Odell Beckham is right up there with him and will be. And people say, well, how do you rush him up the tree? Well, you don't rush him up the tree. You look at what he did, what he can do, what you think he will do. And then, you know, the other thing is Calvin Johnson, and his year wasn't that good last year. I know he had injuries, but when you look at what Tate did when he wasn't in there, Tate had some big games when Johnson wasn't in there. And you start to wonder, is Calvin Johnson starting to slow down just a little bit? So I think Julio will get big money. A.J. Green probably will too, but I think Julio's the better of those two.
When you write something like that, and you've never been afraid to share your opinion on who you think is overrated or what have you, how much feedback do you get from these guys? Because you show up, you put your face in the locker room, you put in your time. Do guys come up to you and constantly say, hey, what are you talking about, man? What are you doing this? Or do they kind of just let it slide and pretend they didn't see it?
Some say soft stuff and some don't. I remember going back when I made Chad Johnson the most overrated Bengal, and, you know, he got after me on, I think it was the beginning stages of Twitter back then, and he got after me a little bit. And then, you know me, I said, all right, Chad, here I went at training camp. I went up, here I am, Chad, what do you got to say? And we ended up going to, you know, to lunch, and he pulled the old, I don't have the wallet with me, so I ended up paying, but that was okay.
Oh, no,
but,
did not. He did not. Pete, he takes out 100 guys a night on Twitter, right? You've seen that. Like, let's all go to the bowling alley. Let's all go to here. And he made you pay for lunch?
Oh, yeah, well, awesome. The best part of that was when we got back, we were driving into the Bengals facility, and the guard didn't know who he was. That was even better for me.
Oh, no.
I never, you know, and then I worked with him for a year down when we were down at CBS, and he worked with us for a year, and we were together, and I never let him forget that people forgot who he was when he tried to drive back into the facility, that's for sure.
That's amazing. Pete Prisco here with CBSSports.com. Pete, I saw earlier this week, Jim Fossil was quoted as saying, Don't be surprised if there is a very good spring league opening next year in the NFL. Same day, Bill Polian, also on Sirius XM NFL Radio, talked about the crying need for a developmental league. Do you hear a lot of this talk in league circles? Is there a push sooner rather than later for the NFL to have their own developmental league as a bridge between college and being ready for the pros?
Yeah, I think they will do it. And how they do it, you know, the mechanism of it, who knows? I mean, you know, that league that they had, they tried to do it and it wasn't linked with the NFL and it just flopped. Guys didn't get paid. People didn't get paid. Coaches didn't get paid. I know coaches are still owed a couple hundred grand from that league, never got paid. So, I think you got to do it the right way. And by that, you have a spring league, developmental league and quarterbacks, you know, young quarterbacks get a chance to play. You got so many quarterbacks. We have no idea who they are because they don't get to play. You know, guys that are sitting on the back end of the bench, let them come in there and play. Nobody wants to go to Canada and play. I mean, because you want to get the NFL money. So maybe if you take, you know, six or seven, eight guys off of, you know, the back end of the roster and let them play in that league, you know, six, seven, eight teams, and you stock the rosters that way, then I think it gives them an opportunity. Now, some people will say, well, I don't want, you know, player number 51 on my team getting hurt playing in the spring league. But remember, you go to camp with so many bodies that have no chance to make the team. I mean, you could basically cut the Jaguars team with the exception of maybe three or four guys right now. Well, those guys know. Everybody goes to camp. They know who's going to make it and who's not. So give those other guys an opportunity to maybe develop some skills, learn how, you know, get bigger, maybe get stronger, get faster, and learn how to read defenses of your quarterback.
All right, let's focus in on the Jacksonville Jaguars. We put that quote of yours. I heard you say it on XL Primetime a couple weeks ago. You think the Jags will come out with victories against Carolina and Miami. Those games certainly crucial, Pete, when you consider then on the road to New England and as you're expecting with Tom Brady back, a full-strength defending champ, and then on the road to Indy is going to be difficult. So getting off to a good start, something that's eluded a Gus Bradley coach team here in Jacksonville. What makes you so bullish on the Jags getting out of the gate so well this year?
Well, I think they're better. They'll be much better as a team. And remember, they pushed Miami all over the place last year, and then we're losing. You know, it was one of those deals where you looked up and you said, "Wait a second, they should be winning this game." And then they had the, you know, the bad plays. Yeah, but they pushed Miami around. I don't think Miami is great. I think, you know, at home you should win that game. And I think Carolina, you know, Carolina won the division, but they weren't a great football team last year. And what makes you believe they're going to be that much better this year? You look at their offensive line. They're counting on Michael Orr to play left tackle. Good luck with that. So I think those are two winnable games right out of the gate for Jacksonville. And to be quite frank about it, I think they will win both of them.
What's your biggest concern right now as you look at this roster? And we obviously haven't seen training camp and the preseason play out, but as it stands on paper today, what's your biggest concern with the Jags?
Well, manufacturing pass rush, and you know, they keep pointing to their sack stats last year, but it wasn't a sack, you know, number that made you step back and go, wow, they really got after the quarterback, because it wasn't great pressure. You know what I mean? And granted, they were playing from behind a lot, so it you know, get the opportunities in third and long as you might in different situations, but I think they got to manufacture the pass rush. And, you know, we keep hearing, oh, here's Andre Branch. Well, it's a contract year for Andre Branch, so show what you can do. You know, Chris Clemens, what does he have left? And even Ryan Davis, you know, certain websites love Ryan Davis. Ryan Davis is a good player, but come on, he's not an elite pass rusher. So I think you have to hope they manufacture pass rush if you're a Jaguar fan. And the other thing is you know, the back end. You know, Cyprian, to me, needs to be the box safety. He needs to be Cam Chancellor. They need to find a guy with range who can cover a lot of ground and help make up for that. Now, they're hard to find. They went after McCourty. He turned them down and went back to New England. And so you look around the league, where do you find him? They signed Sergio Brown. I think he's more of a special teams player, but he'll get a shot. What about Sample moving from, you know, playing like a strong safety at Louisville to playing more free safety? That's the question to me. If they can get by with manufacturing pass rush and get some good play, you know, from the free safety spot, I think they have a chance to be much better on defense. They'll be, you know, faster, better, quicker. I just don't know if they'll be that much better on defense.
You look at the offensive line with Parnell coming in. Wisniewski going to try to compete with Belanco, and then they draft A.J. Cann. They've got more pieces there. They've got better depth. Do you expect it to be significantly improved? Because it certainly needs to be.
I think the offense as a whole will be significantly improved all the way across the board. And by that, I mean, you know, the offensive line, I think Parnell, I was watching the Parnell tape the other day, and he was mauling dudes. I mean, he put on the tape against the Giants. First couple plays, he knocks a guy's helmet off. By the way, he needs to get a tighter helmet because you watch his play, his helmet pops off at least three or four times a game. But he's nasty and tough and athletic, and I think he's going to be an upgrade. I think that right side of the line, you know, 2 years down the road might be one of the better right sides in the league with him and Linder. Center, you know, Wisniewski's not, you know, overpowering, but he's smart. I think that's important for them if he does beat out Polanco. I think left guard, you know, Beatles played better at the end, and I was a big Beatles critic. I didn't think he was a very good signing. I didn't think he was a very good player, but he was better at the end. I still think Cam ultimately will win that job at some point during the season, be a big physical run player there. And then the left tackle, it's all, you know, this guy's, you know, up to 315 pounds or whatever he is. He's been too light in the behind. He's got to play better. So the line will be better. I think Yeldon's going to be a really good running back. You know, Julius Thomas adds a dimension to a team that every league, team in the league would love to have. I think Allen Robinson is ready for, you know, 70 catches and you know, 1,200 yards and maybe 8 touchdowns. And then you got to look to Marquise Lee. We always hear Marquise Lee, Marquise Lee, Marquise Lee. Well, it's time for Marquise Lee to stay on the field and do it. And if he can be that take the top guy off receiver, then I think offensively they should be pretty good, because I think the quarterback will get better and better as he gets, you know, better players around.
I certainly hope that's the case. The potential's there. Got to turn it into productivity. I'm with you on those projections for Allen Robinson. Probably not as high on the yardage total, but I think 70 to 80 catches are in that 8 touchdown range, and certainly over 1,000 yards. Very doable for Allen Robinson this year. Don't know anybody who's not excited about seeing him try to take over the number one wide receiver spot. Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com, at Prisco CBS on Twitter, but you already knew that, I assume. Pete, enjoy if you can. I assume you enjoy it, or you wouldn't keep doing it, going to all these training camps around the National Football League.
I can't wait. The travel, the only bad part about travel, Mike, and you're probably like me in this respect, you getting on the plane, storing the overhead luggage, watching every idiot put his seat back, and, you know, all that crap. That's the worst part of it.
But once I'm in my seat, man, I put the shades on, put the neck pillow on, and it wake me when we land, baby.
I can't sleep on the plane with my ADD, so I gotta, you know, have something to do. And God help you if you put your seat back in my face.
Uh-oh. Pete Prisco, ladies and gentlemen. Pete, hopefully, I'm sure we'll see you out of training camp here for the Jags at some point, and he'll be here before you know it.
I think I'm already scheduling in for the scrimmage on Saturday night. I think that's Friday and Saturday that week, I think I'm going to the Jaguars. So.
All right. Well, listen, when you're around, once we kick off training camp and the schedules work out, love to get you in studio for a longer appearance, but we always appreciate your time, man.
You got it, Mike. Take care, man.
All right, buddy. There he goes, Pete Prisco. You can catch him on the Jags pregame show, of course, as well, the Publix tailgate show leading up to kickoff for the Jacksonville Jaguars on all of their game broadcasts throughout the season. So Pete stopping by. Very bullish on the Jags getting off to a good start. And I agree that certainly there's no reason they can't win those games. Tough for me to say that a team that's won 9 games, an average of 3 for each of the last 3 years, is definitively going to start 2-0, but... You know, you throw it out there, and I don't think it's outrageous. 7-8-1 is what the Carolina Panthers were last year. Yes, they were a playoff team. Yes, they won a playoff game. They won it against a team who's was playing about their, what seemed like their 8th quarterback in the Arizona Cardinals last year. So, you know, look, I think that's the thing for the Jags, though. So much importance on those first 2 weeks, because trip to Foxborough, and nobody seems to think that Tom Brady's going to miss that game at this point in time for whatever combination of reasons, even if he is, the suspension is not reduced under 3 games, that he'll get some kind of a court injunction to allow him to continue to play that out while it works its way through the legal system. So you could probably pretty much count on Tom Brady being in the lineup, although guy can hope, right? I mean, I'll be frank. Look, Dave Cole walked by the other day and said, hey, I wish we played him earlier. If he's going to get a 2-game suspension, I'd like to play him in the first couple of weeks. That's not a sign to me of being scared. That's a sign of being pragmatic, all right? That's just the facts of the matter. If guy's got to miss a game, let it be against you, okay? Does that make you scared? Hey, make you whatever it is. I think it makes you smart, quite frankly, and we'll see. It'll be here before you know it. Jags will be on the field 2 weeks from tomorrow on the 31st. If you're a season ticket holder, that practice will be open to you. All right, we'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, who is your favorite player, most exciting player to watch in the current NFL? Who doesn't play for the Jacksonville Jaguars? A lot of people weighing in on that, and we'll wrap up the show and get you ready for tomorrow. Big one tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me? Have you heard who the co-host is going to be? We'll tell you next right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, so far, Dustin Johnson, sole leader in the clubhouse after an opening round 65 at St. Andrews, 7-under par. Shot clear of the field. That includes two guys at 6-under on the course right now, Zach Johnson and Jeff Ogilvie, currently playing. Phil Mickelson just with a bogey. Phil had opened up with birdies on three of his first five holes, and he is back to one under par. Ricky Fowler, guarantee there's a miss coming up right here, Tyler, as he putts on the seventh for birdie. He's had a birdie putt on just about every hole and hasn't made one yet. And he remains even par because I picked him to win the British Open. But it's okay. You know what? I really don't have much of a chance to win my golf fantasy league this year anyway. But I'd like to finish as high as possible. And I know that's not your major concern, but it probably should be. All right, tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me? Have you seen the show we're going to have tomorrow? Duval Doom is back.
Oh, God. Oh, yes. Nice.
Oh, yes. Duval Doom's trying to run Alabama Crimson Tide smack at me. I mentioned the fact that some people wore Ohio State shirts and got in the face of the Tide contingent. I thought it was kind of funny. And he said, my SEC envy is showing through. I remind Doom I'm an FSU fan, and it seemed to work out pretty well when they played an SEC team for the title. I don't know. And he starts throwing me pictures of Alabama rings from, like, Western Division championships and all this. And then he tells me he's a Georgia Southern fan.
Oh, so he didn't even go there, no?
He doesn't even have any – it doesn't even care.
Oh,
even
come
care.
On.
Yeah, well, one thing we know, Georgia Southern is better than Florida. They got that going for him. So he'll be in tomorrow, I'm sure, delighting all of the contingent out there on Jaguar Twitter as he represents well for the fan base.
Friday top five tomorrow, Mike?
Oh, yeah, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, Tyler, because I was kicking around that idea yesterday, and I do believe we will do an off-topic Friday top five. We're going to do your five most overrated movies of all time. Okay, the movies that everyone loves, and you're just like, I just don't see it. You know, I just don't get it. I've seen the movie. Don't know why everyone's so gaga over this particular movie. So we'll do that tomorrow. Your own personal Friday top five, or you can just weigh in on your favorite movie that falls into that category. Movie that you just scratch your head when everyone raves about it. And you're just like, eh, whatever the case may be. I got plenty of those. So my difficulty will be cutting down my list into the top five. Ryan D. Costin just followed me on Twitter in time to ask me, why not ask Mr. Briscoe, who's going to block Ndamukong Suh? Jacksonville beating Carolina, Miami? Yeah, okay. I replied, who is Mr. Briscoe? And then he said, oh, my bad, Mr. Prisco. So, hey, look, if you want to cling to what happened in the past as your sole arbiter, yeah, Jacksonville, I guess, will never going to beat anybody. Right? Just because they've won nine games in the last 3 years, they couldn't possibly beat anybody ever again, probably, right? Or couldn't expect more than three wins ever again. Of course, I guess after 1999, you would have thought they're going to win 14 games every year as well. How could that possibly be that any, you know, look, things change. The landscape changes quickly. And as Pete said, the Jags are right there with Miami. Last year we saw it. And it was two ill-conceived throws by Blake Bortles that turned into touchdowns for Miami that provided the winning margin in that game. Hey, look, could they lose both those games? Certainly they could, but the idea that they can't beat Carolina and Miami, I think is not accurate. You know, will they? Time will tell. I'm guessing Ryan is probably a fan of one of those teams, perhaps. But maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? Tomorrow, of course, when Duval Doom is in, Friday's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. And Claude Nolan Cadillac's had a lot of great deals, a lot of good things going on. For their listeners, for our listeners out there to pay attention to and take advantage of, including the Edge, a Claude Nolan Cadillac Edge. It's simple. No dealer fees, no finance markup. They save you thousands of dollars. You can get the Edge and save time and money and start driving your Claude Nolan Cadillac today. It's as simple as picking up the phone and calling 642-5111, or even better yet, stop by 4700 Southside Boulevard and take advantage of some of the great deals going on at Claude Nolan Cadillac, including you can lease on a 24-month lease, a 2015 SRX crossover for as little as $339 a month, and a 2015 XTS sedan on a 36-month lease for as little as $479 a month as well. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac could be just one step away. Visit ClaudeNolan.com or stop by and see them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Regardless, tell them Mike Dempsey sent you. They're going to take great care of you and make sure you get the best deal possible at Claude Nolan Cadillac. Now, Fan Feedback Spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you who is the most exciting player for you to watch in the NFL who doesn't play for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is in honor of Barry Sanders and you know, certainly one of the most easy to watch players, whether you're rooted for the Detroit Lions or not throughout his career. I'll give you some of the responses we got today. Let's see. Most exciting, I'll take Calvin Johnson or Antonio Brown, said Bortles Combat on Twitter. Duval Doom, I don't know who he voted for, but he didn't vote for J.J. Watt. I know that. He thinks he's overrated, and so is Andrew Luck. Stevie Howland said, Irish Jag said, I love watching Cam Newton play, whether things are going right or not. I'm a guy who's partial to those running quarterbacks as well, just in terms of watching guys play. Eric Harris said, I like to watch Aaron Rodgers throw it around and perform that magic. Always like the good quarterback play. Brandon Muchmore went with J.J. Watt. He's explosive and makes an impact. Hashtag wish he was on our team. Who else did we get today? Got several votes for Aaron Rodgers. Got a lot of votes for Marshawn Lynch today. He's got a fun running style. Yeah, you should be. Skittles. Some people just voted for Skittles. Several votes for Peyton Manning as well. Several votes for Dez Bryant. Sean Belasso, S. Belasso on Twitter went with Le'Veon Bell and Jamal Charles. They're dynamic. I think in terms of running backs, we just have a fun style to watch. Jamal Charles is near the top. Adrian Peterson when he has it going as well, because he's got the breakaway speed. He's got the ability to run you over. Got several votes for him as well today. So Gronk got a little bit of love on that as well. And even a vote from Damon Austin on for Julian Edelman on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. I think Russell Wilson is near the top for me. Love watching Gronk play. I think everybody can appreciate that big galoot type. That the guy that just is difficult to bring down, right? Gronk is that when he catches the ball, you see guys in the secondary bouncing off of him. Larry Zonka, Earl Campbell, you know, just big guys that just were just an impossible feat to bring him down one-on-one seemingly. Adrian Peterson's got some of that in him, certainly. And you look at some of these receivers. Now, you look at Dez, man. Dez is a load when he goes across the middle, when he's dealing in the secondary with some 5'11 cornerback out there. He has a big, thick, strong man that is just as capable of delivering punishment to you as you are to him. Boy, they grown big these days. Tyler, who tops the list for you? Who's the most exciting player to watch who doesn't play for the Jaguars? Who would you say? Tyler, I'd have with you in 30 seconds.
Sorry, I was talking to Tom Champion over at SEC Media Days. But anyways, I would say Marshawn Lynch. I like watching him play. He's always entertaining. Dives into the end zone with a little crotch grab. Adds a little flair to the show.
Tyler's big on the crotch grab, and you see how he tried to deflect right there. He tried to basically verbally give me the smackdown and say, I'm actually attending to real work responsibilities on this end. We can't all just run our mouth for 2 hours every day. Tyler, well played, very subtle, but it didn't go unnoticed. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to John Harris, the Texan sideline reporter, talking a little Houston Texan football, and of course, Pete Prisco. It's Prisco with a P, ladies and gentlemen, at Prisco CBS on Twitter. You know him well. All right there. People got a bunch of tweets and texts. Hey, tell Pete we'd love to hear him more on the radio. Hey, look, I'll just put this out there, and we've mentioned this before. As we had a revolving series of co-hosts last year, Pete was one of the top guys on the list. He's just so busy during football season, it's tough for his schedule to work out to be in as much as possible. But he appears on XL Primetime quite a bit. We'll have him on as frequently as time allows as well. So you'll get your fill. And as I said, you'll hear Pete on the Jaguar pregame show just like last year going into kickoff of every and Monday night, of course, as well, as Joe Fortunato points out. Thursday night is Jaguars Thursday. What is Monday night, Joe? Give me the official title.
Jaguars Monday.
Is it Jaguars Monday?
Yes,
I didn't want to say and accuse you guys of having less than the full capacity of being creative, but Jaguars Monday.